It's the ERP Confab. I'm David Essex, industry editor at Search ERP, with my colleagues Brian McKenna, business applications editor at Computer Weekly, and Jim O'Donnell, news editor at Search ERP. Environmental sustainability has become a priority for many corporations and governments, and ERP vendors are responding with specialized tools. But how much impact can ERP software really have? Which vendors are leading on the issue? And what about the ways IT can actually hurt the environment, such as the massive energy requirements of fast expanding data centers? It seems as if sustainability has been a major trend, not just in the broader world, but in the ERP world. A lot of the vendors have been trying to jump on that bandwagon and offer some software, some new modules that help people manage the sustainability effort, by which we mean largely environmental sustainability. And Jim, you've been doing quite a bit of writing on that recently, including covering SAP, which is probably the leader, it seems, among the ERP vendors and really putting this front and center.
Yeah, Dave, thanks for having me on again on the Confab. You know, it is really, it's a topic that sustainability, you know, it's kind of a very broad sort of concept. It includes a lot of things like ESG, but, you know, for the purposes here, I think I'm just going to focus on sustainability as an issue and maybe a few subsets of it, like the circular economy. I did, for an article just recently about sustainability trends and ERP vendors, I talked to representatives from SAP, of course, and from IFS, which is another ERP vendor that's been, prominent in the sustainability sort of arena, and a few other industry insiders and some people from other ERP vendors. One of the key points that we're making, looking forward to the year ahead, is that sustainability is an issue that has kind of come into the boardroom at a top level, a CEO, CIO, CTO level, where it really hadn't been before. Almost anyone that I talked to said that, you know, in the past it might have been given some lip service, but now it's really getting some attention in really ways that companies are starting to think of, not just, as I said, paying lip service to it, but actually implementing programs that really take, sustainability seriously. From the ERP perspective, as you said, SAP has been certainly the leading ERP vendor in sort of promoting the issue of sustainability and also providing products that can help, their customers deal with the issues as they see fit, whatever initiative they're trying to pursue or whatever goal from a sustainability, from an ESG standpoint, they're trying to pursue. SAP is starting to roll out some products that are really going to help that.
They made it the main theme of their last Sapphire conference last June.
It was a big theme. And Christian Klein, the CEO, recently had an article on Fast Company.
I can put a link to that in the landing page. Yes.
Yeah, once we find that. Certainly, that's an attention-grabbing exercise for them. And actually, on their last earnings call, discussing their Q4 earnings in January, Christian Klein, the SAP CEO, called sustainability a topic that's near and dear to his heart. And he was really sort of pushing the concept. Just the way it looks, I think Christian Klein is probably a better person to push that message from SAP's point of view. He's young, he's German, he's sort of very cosmopolitan looking and sounding person. And I think just from the youthful angle of it, I think it gives SAP a lot of credibility in sort of pushing their sustainability agenda that maybe they wouldn't have had with previous leadership. Their internal story with it goes back probably more than 10 years. I think about 10 years ago, SAP committed to become net zero or carbon neutral by the year 2050. And earlier this year, I think maybe at the last Sapphire conference, as you mentioned, they moved that down to the year 2030. So that's only a few years from now that they are committing internally to be carbon neutral. So they are recognized for having some credibility on this. And maybe that stems from being a European-based company. They're from Germany, and I think maybe Brian, you can speak to this a little bit. But I think there's definitely more, regulatory interest. There's more, I think, interest from consumers in Europe than in the U.S. Although that's changing. It's certainly in the U.S. More companies are becoming more active in sort of pursuing sustainability aid. Interest.
Yeah. So just anecdotally, I can provide a bit of color onto that. So I was a judge at the SAP UK and Ireland user customer success awards at the end of last year, kind of fourth quarter of last year. So I was on this panel, and the UK managing director of SAP UK and Ireland, Mikael Verhoeven, blindsided all of the panelists by asking us what we thought about the COP, because COP26 in Glasgow mm-hmm. had just finished like a week or two before. So we were, you know, asked to give some impromptu thoughts about COP26, because that's very much on top of his mind. So yeah, I think culturally, it's common currency at SAP.
I would just say I think the board level interest, you know, that was sort of noted by several people. There's essentially three areas or three sort of arenas where there's pressure that's sort of making that more of an issue. There is increasing regulatory bodies, and there's increasing regulations in Europe and in the United States, both in, you know, states like California maybe are the ones kind of leading the way in the U.S., but it is happening more here in the U.S. There's pressure from consumers, where you can go into stores now all the time and you'll see, labels that have carbon neutral certified on the actual, apparel or whatever you're buying. It's also coming from internally, from the workforce. It says they want to work for companies that are doing the right thing, that are being more sustainable. So that's some of the reasons why it's becoming more of a board issue. And that's some of the reasons why SAP in particular is coming out with some of these products.
Jim, this may be an unfair question to ask. How would you describe the ways in which the actual ERP systems help? There's these new modules, and I will provide a link to your piece from last Sapphire that lists all the sustainability portfolio, which is almost a dozen different modules and things from SAP. So we know the names of the products, and we know what they're saying they want to do, but what is your sense about how robust or how detailed the actual modules are and how well they connect to the real world of sustainability?
Well, from the SAP point of view, I think the products are pretty detailed, and they have several of them. So I think you can sort of pick and choose what your organization wants to focus on, right? They have one that's a very recently released called SAP Cloud for Sustainability Enterprises, which is basically a bundle of cloud-based products. And it has various capabilities for, you know, tracking your carbon emissions, for instance, in your supply chain, or tracking the measures you're taking to reduce waste in the products you're making. So I think that's a very sort of broad-based portfolio product. They also have some, more targeted products, like one called SAP Responsible Design and Production, which allows companies to basically build sustainable practices into the design of their products, which is, one way you can, start to, implement a circular economy model. So you're able to sort of outlay the processes of not only your supply chain of the product being, manufactured, designed, manufactured, distributed, but you can also start to build in processes for the reverse supply chain. So if you have you're implementing a circular economy product or process, that means you're trying to take back parts of the product or things that can be reused or used again in production, but you need a way to sort of track that. You need a way to, get that from the consumer or from the other endpoint back into your system. So that has some capabilities to help you do that. There's another product called Product Footprint Management, which basically allows companies to track, the emissions that make up the total carbon footprint of a product that they're making from the product's manufacturer through to the supply chain. What SAP is saying is they're allowing you to, and this is their argument, I'm not saying whether they're being successful or not, but they're saying that one of the ways that you could essentially, the argument was you could either run a company sustainably before or focus on sustainability, or you could focus on profitability. And they're saying you can have it both ways. You can be sustainable and you can have profitability. But the only way you can really do that is to actually track the emissions and, track the expense that goes into, sourcing products, sourcing plastics or versus sourcing maybe recycled materials that you want to use for your packaging, right? So they're saying, if you have to make trade-offs, like you want to say your company, you're using plastic packaging now, but you want to change to use more recycled materials in your products. You want to move away from plastic. You know, the recyclable materials may cost more. They may come from another part of the world from where you're sourcing your plastic. So you have to kind of build the, you know, the carbon footprint of that material that's coming from another part of the world into, you know, the cost of manufacturing now. And, you know, is that going to be more or less than the, you know, the plastics that you were using before? So you got to make all these you know, kind of trade-offs and sort of run some analysis on what the environmental impact, what the sustainability impact may be on something like, you know, moving from, you know, plastics to more, you know, sustainable resources, and have that analysis in more or less, you know, in a comprehensive form that might not have been available other than having these kind of the analysis products that they have.
For the listeners, we'll be providing a link to your most recent article, which appeared, I think, on February 4th, titled ERP Critical to Achieving Sustainability Goals in 2022. And you interviewed a lot of folks and quoted some other vendors, including Infor and IFS, and I think Acumatica, who are also really making a sustainability push.
IFS is another, I would say, of the sort of the top tier ERP vendors. IFS definitely is more along the lines of SAP in sort of, you know, pursuing sustainability as an issue. They don't quite have as many products up, but they are coming out with more products that are doing similar things as far as helping companies sort of track and manage sustainability initiatives. They've come out internally and said that they have, you know, sustainability goals like net zero by a certain time. The other company that you mentioned, Acumatica, is actually in the same corporate structure as IFS, and they're a US-based company, but they're a cloud-based ERP. They're more for, you know, more smaller manufacturers and smaller enterprises. And I remember speaking with their CEO, John Roskill, recently for this article, and they're saying that just moving old, outdated ERP systems to a cloud-based system was advantageous for Acumatica, mm-hmm. if you're the vendor that they choose, right? But they're also saying that that can save up to anywhere from 60 to 70% of emissions costs by getting off of old, outdated, energy inefficient systems onto very highly efficient cloud systems. And Acumatica himself, he said they've got a goal of moving to all renewable energy sources by the year 2030, mm-hmm. I believe it is.
I guess it shouldn't be a surprise. It makes a lot of sense that many of the leading ERP vendors in the sustainability efforts are the ones that have historically been strong in both manufacturing and supply chain, where you can do a lot with your connected manufacturing execution systems and then your supply chain management systems, trying to achieve efficiencies. I think one of the people you quoted talked about more efficient deliveries even. It's very easy to see how if you can cut down the number of necessary trips, you can cut down on emissions.
Well, I'll just make this point. That was a company called VAI, which is a very, they're a smaller ERP. They're mainly in manufacturing logistics, mainly for retail industry and for restaurants and, you know, companies like that. And their CEO CTO, Kevin Beasley, told me that, you know, basically just making even small changes like going from paper-based systems to an ERP system, didn't have to be VAI, but obviously he would want you to go to VAI. But that can help you with things like you said, making more efficient routing, mm-hmm. you know, making, you know, getting rid of paper, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's, I think companies, you know, tend to think of this as, it can almost be overwhelming. It's such a huge topic that, you know, that maybe it's better in some ways to think of it, especially if you're a smaller company that would, you know, be more interested in a VAI than an SAP for your ERP system. That you can sort of, you can take it in sort of, you know, more manageable, more relatable bites rather than thinking of, you know, a huge sort of system that you have to implement to, you know, to have a sustainability initiative.
Most of the coverage we've talked about has appeared on our Search ERP site and Search SAP, but some of the very best coverage at any Tech Target website has been on Computer Weekly for actually any number of years now, Brian, where you work. So can you talk a bit about some of the recent coverage that has gotten your attention on Computer Weekly?
Oh, that's very kind of you, David. Thank you very much for saying that. Yeah, we have published a lot on the kind of broad topic of IT and climate change and so on. And there's a wonderful kind of vein of stories written by my colleague, Caroline Donnelly, more on the kind of cloud and data center side of things, which is where the kind of some of the big wins in IT will be around, you know, managing data centers to be more eco-efficient and things like that. Caroline's written a lot on this topic. In particular, I'd maybe draw attention to some of the work that she's done on the water consumption habits of data centers, because some of the big clouds, behemoths like AWS, Microsoft with Azure, and you know, GCP, etc., they're very keen to talk about some of the efforts that they do make to be more sustainable, but they tend not to talk about their water consumption quite so much. And that's an issue that she's kind of dug into brilliantly. So I would encourage your listeners to check out her work. And also my colleague, Cliff Sarin. And again, I'd probably flag up the way Cliff has looked at the fabrication of hardware, because the fabrication of IT itself, hardware, chips, right, the actual stuff that makes these machines work, is contributing a lot to the climate emergency. I mean, I suppose a big thing to bear in mind is that something like 2% of all CO2 emissions come from the IT industry. So the IT industry itself is part of, you know, it's posing itself in terms of ERP software maybe as being part of the solution, but is also part of the problem. And that's more than the aviation industry.
Threatens to only get worse. We haven't even mentioned blockchain. We were joking the other day, we don't want to boil the ocean, no pun intended. But it's only going to get worse, it appears.
Well, there's also a brilliant article by one of my regular freelancers, Stephen Matheson. The title of which is How Software Can Help Clean Up Emission Intensive Industries. Now, that's quite an interesting area with respect to some of our guys, you know, SAP, Oracle, well, SAP and Oracle mainly, but I guess also IFS, actually thinking about it, is that, you know, those kind of industries, so like heavy industries, chemical, petrochemical industries and so on, they generate, this is from Stephen's article, as much as 11.6% of greenhouse gases. So if you can use software to reduce the impact there, to reduce those harmful emissions, then, you know, those are big wins. You know, those are potentially big wins. And these are, just going back to what Mikael Verhoeven asked the panel at that event I attended towards the end of last year at the Gherkin, if you want a bit of local colour. And Mikael, by the way, is Dutch, not German. I should make that very clear. His question. So my response to that was, in part, SAP has a big opportunity here. And the same would be true of Oracle and IFS and the rest, because their customers are among these, you know, emission intensive industries and big oil companies and things like that. So, you know, they have an opportunity to make a big impact with their, you know, the stuff that Jim's been talking about, the products and services that Jim's been talking about. But yeah, it's true. It's been an area of strength for Computer Weekly's coverage for sure. The whole question of sustainability, and in particular, as I said, I would draw attention to Caroline's stuff and Cliff's stuff.
Mm-hmm. We haven't talked much about Oracle. We've talked about their archrival SAP, which at least by all appearances seems to be out ahead, at least in making this a high profile effort with all the mercenary benefits to it. Also, Salesforce, company that you follow quite a bit, Brian. Any thoughts about what the two of them have been up to, the sustainability?
Well, for the purposes of the podcast, I did a little bit of digging around what Oracle has to offer. I must say, I've never emerged from an Oracle event thinking, wow, there's a really big emphasis there on the climate emergency. And maybe I just wasn't paying enough attention, but I don't think
it's... I think you would have noticed if it had been emphasized, yes.
You reckon?
I do.
I mean, as you would expect, a big part of what their pitch would be, move to Oracle Cloud.
Yeah.
You know, you get a lot, there's going to be a lot of environmental benefit from going to OCI. So that's partly what they say. And I came across a stat that 100% renewable energy is used at 94 of Oracle's data centers across 10 countries. So that gives you a sense of the scale of some of their own activity in this mm-hmm. area. And as you would expect, in reporting environmental data through the Oracle Analytics Cloud, you know, they've got visualization software to help CIOs to do that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. As with, you know, the SAP offer that Jim was talking about. And we should also mention Microsoft, because Microsoft has a cloud for sustainability offer as well. And Microsoft, we've reported on, Caroline's reported on, in fact, on some of their interventions in the debate, if you like. Lucas Joppa, their chief sustainability officer, invoked a kind of moon landing type level of cooperation necessary to address the climate emergency. So Microsoft is part of the picture here as well. Salesforce, something that I just remembered actually was before the COP, COP26 in Glasgow, on the eve of the COP, the Benioffs released press release, an announcement about $300 million that they were putting into fighting against the climate emergency. One was $200 million into reforestation, and then $100 million into grants for various not-for-profits mm-hmm. and things like that. And they also declared themselves net zero already at Dreamforce in San Francisco, at the last Dreamforce in 2021. They also have a sustainability cloud. So yeah, they all have things to say in this area, but I mean, maybe we should just bear in mind that IT is also part of the problem.
It is. Yeah, it's adding to the problem. And since I'm often the one who adds a note of cynicism, there's some real tools, there's some real practical management of data and the systems that are connected to ERP, where you can achieve not just report on what you're doing, but you can find some efficiencies in that integrated system for sure. There's also a risk, though. I think that it's like a lot of things that the vendors push in any given year because it's popular, that there's a superficiality, I think, to what they're doing. And that if we dig underneath, we find that there are holes in the effort and it's more complicated. And it's maybe the biggest most complicated problem in the world that anyone's dealing with right now, other than maybe fighting a pandemic. It's really more complicated than that. And so it's understandable if they don't have all the answers or even a quarter of them.
So it's part of our job to hold them to account.
Yeah.
To make sure that the reality matches up to some of the lovely rhetoric that they come out with.
Yeah, and dig in a little bit and ask some of the questions that aren't obvious or that they maybe would prefer that we not ask when we hear about these announcements, and get specifics. And it occurs to me too, from a technical point of view, very layman's view of the technical issue, that again, more technology is being called for here, but some automatic connectivity, the Internet of Things sensors and other ways of managing the supply chain, partly for just efficiency and saving money as a company, as a shipper, that's going to be part of the answer. Collecting real data, collecting, you know, just even the environmental and the governmental agencies that track emissions and the ozone layer and things like that, somehow bringing this all together and having and showing the interrelationships and the effect on the climate is a big technical problem. In our final few minutes, one thing I'd like to bring up that is a piece of this, you both touched on it a little bit, is the notion of the data that's being collected, some of which is information that companies like to brag about. This would be the users of ERP often, like the Procter & Gamble's and the Ford Motor companies, usually called ESG data for environmental, social, and governance. So it's partly about how they run their companies, how they treat their employees, whether they are supportive of folks from the LGBTQ community, whether they mine minerals from areas of regional conflict. There's all sorts of measures that go into this beyond the environment, but that's a big chunk of it. And the reality today is that the different methods and the different standards for collecting ESG data, they're really all over the map, as often happens in the world of computerization and information management. For example, the scope 3 supply chain emissions data, it's key for tracking and reporting on probably the biggest offender in carbon emissions, but it's really collected by less than half of companies that report the other ESG data. So that's an area of development. And I would just mention one of our freelancers, Beth Stackpole, has a wonderful piece in the website of the MIT Sloan Management School called Why Sustainable Business Needs Better ESG Ratings. And it goes into quite a bit of depth about how this information is not standardized. So there's a data management and reconciliation issue going on. There are people working on it, but the data isn't comparable. Companies that report it, it's hard to compare apples and oranges. So it's being used for two purposes also. It's an investment thing. There are many investors who are trying to put their money into socially sustainable, environmentally sustainable products and companies. They use these ratings to try to determine where they should put their money. And this information and these rating services are not really doing things in a standardized way. So there's a call for this now to perhaps get the government involved or at least have an industry association that can try to standardize the process of reporting all of this data so that people can choose where to invest, but also companies can use the same information to reform their own process, their own internal processes. So another IT challenge in the sustainability world. Any closing thoughts?
I did want to say a quick word, David, if that's all right, about sure. artificial intelligence, which mm-hmm. is often kind of put forward as a panacea for all ills. But of course, the running AI models, especially running them again and again, is very computationally intensive and uses up a lot of electricity. And there's a brilliant piece by Stephen Matheson about making artificial intelligence greener. Which I would recommend to your to your listeners also.
We'll provide a link to that also in the podcast page. Yes.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention AI.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, part of the solution also. Part of the problem, part of the solution.
I think we could say that about a lot of this, can't we? I mean, there is definitely the, you know, what an SAP or an IFS might put out a product-wise. It's only as good as the companies that use it, for one, and mm-hmm. it's only as good as the data that's actually being, you know, reported, which may or may not be accurate. Companies always, you really have to be, you know, very aware of and very cognizant of the greenwashing that might go on, and the labels you see on the, you know, the apparel that you're buying, you know, who's actually, you know, reporting that, where's that coming from? So those are the type of questions you have to ask as a consumer. You have to be aware of everything that's happening around it as much as you can. But I do think, you know, honestly, from the more optimistic point of view, I think, you know, it is coming to place in the business environment where maybe it hasn't been before. And James Sullivan, who is the head of SAP's sustainability practice, had mentioned to me that once, you know, it takes a long time to get to a tipping point, but once you get to that tipping point, you'd be surprised at how quickly, you know, things can progress and get the ball rolling down the hill for, you know, these initiatives to sort of bear fruit and for companies to kind of go all in on their sustainability efforts. And I just mentioned, if you watch the Super Bowl this Sunday, there was, it seemed like every second advertisement was for an electric vehicle, car, an EV car, which certainly you wouldn't have seen a year ago. No. So I think we're really turning the corner on like, on the tipping point on EVs.
Yeah.
And then it will be that for other sustainability initiatives too, I think.
Yeah, I read that about those ads, and that was seen as a tipping point, at least in the US or I guess global culture, to the degree that other countries watch the Super Bowl. Some people in other countries do, that it was cool to have an EV, and that all sorts of stars and young folks like from The Sopranos and elsewhere we're driving electric vehicles. Plug-in hybrids are all electric vehicles, and that
yeah,
was
and not
first.
Not just little Prius-looking things, but really powerful vehicles like Escalades and things like that.
Yeah,
so sort of showing that the power of the EV.
So this tipping point, I hope the SAP person is right. I hope it comes before the singularity. And Brian, you were talking about AI. So before the machines become sentient, and if you're a fan of the Terminator movies, Turn on Us. I'm hoping that we reach the tipping point with sustainability.
Well, maybe just to pull it back there to kind of add a little bit of optimism before you go off into a kind of this dystopian despair there, David.
Uh-huh.
Just coming back to COP26, I think the general consensus was that it was a qualified success. I mean, not everything was achieved that they had set out to achieve, but there was the securing of near global net zero. So now over 90% of world GDP is now covered by net zero commitments. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing. On the other hand, part of the COP was about consigning coal power to history, and that didn't happen.
Right.
And also some of the support for the less developed countries has not been up to the necessary level. Again, the rich countries not really helping out as much as they should.
It's too bad not enough folks are sold on the fact that there's a business opportunity in renewable energy, for example. Part of it is the fault of governments and the education systems in these countries to show folks that are in the older industries to provide an actual path in education, so-called upskilling and reskilling, so that they can transition to those jobs. So that is another hopeful note. You've dragged me out of my dystopian despair, both of you, and I appreciate, again, the good conversation.